Welcome to 2023 and Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. I'm Michelle McCormick. Every week, we're talking about the healthcare issues that are important to you, whether you're 65 or older, approaching 65, or maybe you're making healthcare decisions for a loved one in their golden years. We invite providers and experts to share insights to help you take control of your healthcare decisions. Well, January is National Blood Donor Month, and it was first celebrated in January 1970 after President Richard Nixon issued a proclamation establishing the observance. Now in its 54th year, the observance brings attention to the vital role that blood donors play in public health and civic duty. But first, founded in Port Charlotte, Florida in 2008 and now headquartered in Fort Myers, Millennium Physician Group has quickly become the leading independent physician group with more than 800 healthcare providers across the Southeast. Services center on primary care and complemented by specialty care, walk-in centers, radiology and lab services, physician therapy, telehealth, wellness programs, home health, hospital care, and so much more. Nationally recognized as a leader in value-based care with consistently high levels of physician engagement, Millennium aims to create a genuinely connected healthcare experience for patients by providing a comprehensive and coordinated approach to healthcare. And we want to be your connection to a healthier life. Learn more, and you can schedule your next primary care visit online at millenniumphysician.com. Well, January is National Blood Donor Month. Unlike other blood centers in our community, donations collected at LifeSouth Community Blood Centers stays in Northeast Florida. It's used to treat patients in 70% of our region's hospital beds. Joining us today is James Scon. He's the District Community Development Coordinator for LifeSouth Community Blood Centers. James, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so it's always in the news that, we're critically low on blood, but we're going to talk about that first. Sure. Let's learn more about James. What brought you to to LifeSouth Community Blood Centers? Tell us about your path.
So I've been with them for about 2 years. I wanted to do something that actually made a difference in our, society as a whole. And I kind of consistently wanted to look at nonprofits, and this is where it landed me. I didn't realize before getting this job exactly how critical the need kind of constantly is, and how kind of on that edge of running out we perpetually are. So I do feel like it's a fun job, but it's also a really important job.
Yeah, I find it so interesting, a blood center, lots of blood collected for different things. And tell us a little bit about LifeSouth and how, people can start to support you guys in the community. I didn't know, first of all, you're a nonprofit.
Yeah. So we're the red, white, and blue buses that you see around town asking you to donate blood, where, you'll see us sit random offices or in front of like retail locations.
Yeah, you have the little flyy guys out there.
Yeah, exactly. There's other ones than us, but we provide for most of Jacksonville. So about 70% of the hospital beds here, all of the level one and level two trauma centers are us. So if you get into an accident in the, North Florida region, it is a pretty much 100% chance that the blood is coming from somebody who donated on one of our buses or one of our centers.
Mm-hmm.
We're an organization here in Jacksonville that supports Jacksonville hospitals.
Yeah, so that's really cool. And then LifeSouth, are you guys just the buses or can we go to a center? How many centers in town?
We have one major center over in Bay Meadows. We have two kind of pop-up centers. We have one in Julington Creek and we have one in Fleming Island. We also are, in Putnam. I mean, the further out you go, we're around. Mm-hmm. But as far as what I cover, Jacksonville, Putnam area.
Yeah. Are you guys in all of Florida? Or just covering the Northeast region?
I think you can get a little bit too south for us at a certain point. But yeah, no, we're most of Florida, definitely North Florida, Alabama, Georgia.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So a little bit more in the Southeast as well. Mm-hmm. So talk about, why is the need for a National Blood Donor Month?
So, like you said at the top there, it's been around for 54 years, I believe it is now. It's something that people don't think about unless it's right in front of them, I think. And so having as many opportunities as possible to kind of put it in front of them is vital. I mean, we struggle certain times of the year, the holidays we just went through, hard, summer, hard. People will be, taking vacations, just kind of not thinking about things like this. We also don't have a lot of regular donors. Ever since the pandemic, really, we've lost a lot of regular donors, people that just come by every, 8-9 weeks and donate. Or even just more than once a year, it's pretty rare to have that. So that's kind of part of my job, is try to get as many people to become regularly aware of this, not just,
once a year. Yeah.
Right. Or, you know, or just never. I mean, a lot of people never did.
Right. I tried to donate blood at one point, and I was told, this was years ago, and I was told I had low iron and that I wasn't able to do it. So let's go through someone just saying, you know what, today's my day. I'm going to go donate blood.
Sure.
Let's walk through the process of someone just entering a bus.
I mean, obviously, you've found our bus. You can go on our website to do that, or one of our centers, like you mentioned, and it's lifesouth.org for anybody that's curious. So you found your way to one of our buses, or you just happen to come by and you have some free time on your hands. It's about a 30-minute process for just a normal whole blood donation. It is pretty straightforward. I mean, you go through a questionnaire. You need a photo ID. You need to be over 16. If you are 16, we would want a guardian's consent. Mm-hmm. If you're 17 and up, you're just good to go. You need to be over 110 pounds. So there's a few basics. We check your, you know, like you said, your iron levels, make sure you're safe. That fluctuates day to day. So, I mean, you being told that you couldn't that day doesn't mean you can't ever. I mean, it might be. I don't know.
Do I need to eat before I get on the bus?
That would be a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah. Having had like a good hearty breakfast or lunch, whatever time of day it is, you know, iron heavy things like beans and leafy greens and nuts, like the meat, red meat really help. Bring that level up so that it's a, you know, safe place to donate. But obviously, again, if you're deficient in iron or you know, weight or whatever, then we're not going to just, you know, unsafely take your blood.
Right, right.
So yeah, we go through a little screening process, ask you some FDA related questions. There's about 40, so it takes a minute. Yeah,
okay.
It takes a minute to go through. They're not terribly large questions. I mean, you know, you'll know the answer pretty quick.
Okay.
If you're on a certain medication or
sure.
Like they just lifted an FDA regulation that really cramped our ability to get blood. There was mad cow disease regulations. So if you were in like from the 90s range of time, if you lived over a certain period of time in like the UK or Ireland or France, we had to turn you down.
Wow.
So people would come up and have like that accent. And I just know, I'm like, I know what you're going to ask me. And actually this year we get to take blood from all three of those groups of people. So
okay.
If you're one of those people that are listening, you know, you could come
well,
in and
that's interesting you say that. I was somewhere and we had a bus out and a gentleman came on the bus and he's like, I knew they were going to turn me down. I lived overseas.
Yeah.
So that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, that's a good one. And I'm trying to get the word out as much as possible about that one. Cause I think a lot of those people are still walking around saying, well, I can't give blood. Same with tattoos. People think, because there used to be an FDA regulation in Florida for tattoos. If you got one within a year, you couldn't give blood, but that's no longer the case. If you went to an actual, like, you know, licensed tattoo parlor, you're good to go. Same day. You can go give blood.
Okay.
People sometimes point at their tattoos. Oh, I wish I could, buddy.
But I have tattoos, but now you can.
Yeah.
So is there a maximum age?
No.
Is someone ever too old to donate blood?
No. I know in other countries sometimes they have regulations. Really, that's why we do the interview process beforehand to make sure you're in a safe health position. But no, a lot of our donor base is older.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that's another one of the things that, you know, comes with my job is trying to get younger people out to do this.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, that is kind of a bit of an issue is that we have an aging donor base and not enough younger folks jumping in. But no, whatever age you are, if you're feeling healthy, if you're feeling good, if you, you know, like you mentioned iron, if you're able to give, yeah, there's no age that we would turn you down on.
Okay. All right. We are talking with James Gaughan, the District Community Development Coordinator for LifeSouth Community Blood Centers. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about National Blood Donor Month. So lots more to cover, James. So stick around. Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. I'm Michelle McCormick. Every week, we're talking about healthcare issues that are important to you. Whether you're 65 or older, maybe approaching 65, or you're just making healthcare decisions for a loved one, we invite providers and experts to share insights to help you take control of your healthcare decisions. Well, January is National Blood Donor Month, and this is really important since there is a shortage of blood in the country. This was first celebrated, though, this donor month, this acknowledgement, in January 1970, after President Richard Nixon issued a proclamation establishing the observance. Now in its 54th year, the observance brings attention to the vital role that blood donors play in public health and civic duty. All right, guest today is James Gaughan. He's the District Community Development Coordinator for LifeSouth Community Blood Centers. James, thanks for sticking around.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Now, in the first segment, we talked a lot about where you guys are, what you guys do, how you screen. How do you encourage new donors? You know, a lot of people are afraid of needles and maybe they're going to feel woozy or lightheaded afterwards. What do you do to help encourage that? Yes, you are doing a good deed here.
I mean, I think you nailed it right there. I mean, you're doing a good deed here. And that's kind of the primary message. That's something that I think that not enough people maybe hold on to in their head when they think about blood donation. But you're truly saving lives. I mean, that's not just a fabrication. Like, there are people who live and die mm-hmm. and could have died
right.
based on your donation. So I think that alone, I really hope sells it to people, because we're not supposed to incentivize and with good reason, blood donation, like monetarily, for instance. Like, mm-hmm. we give like a sort of thank you to our donors in like the form of a gift card or a t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And those are cool to own. And I mean, I think you should, you know, go out and brag about the fact that you donated blood. That's a cool thing that you've done that yeah. not everyone's done. I think it's something like 10% of everybody.
Huh.
Yeah, it's a real low number of people.
I love seeing on my Facebook feed people that I know who are regular donors, you know, and then they show the picture with the yeah. needle, and they're holding, you know, doing the thing. But I think you have a good point there. It's like, you don't want to incentivize people for doing a good thing. But one pint saves how many lives?
It can save up to 3 lives. Yeah. I mean, it really depends on what your blood type is, what it's being used for, who it's going to. We have different programs that kind of link people up with the right, like, blood antigens. Like, so for instance, I think off air for a second, we had mentioned that there's something called the Sickle Cell Heroes, mm-hmm. Program that we do. So that is almost entirely something that affects Black Americans. And generally the blood that you're going to need to treat that, the person who has sickle cell is going to need regular transfusions of blood, depending on the severity of their case. And it's going to need to be blood that is close enough to theirs for them to receive it. They need red blood cells that are functioning, and their red blood cells are literally the shape of a sickle, so they don't carry oxygen the same way that, you know, a person without it would.
Hmm.
So when a member of the Black community who can have those right antigens gives, we can link them up with the type of person that specifically needs that blood and has those blood antigen markers so that they have a safe transfusion. So you can regularly donate to, you know, some kid who needs it, or some, you know, it can be adult as well.
Uh-huh. So that's cool. So the blood that is donated on the bus, you know, you take my blood, you bring it back, you spin it up or whatever the very smart lab people do.
Sure.
Right. And then they can match you.
Yeah.
And then whenever I go back and donate, it always goes to that same person.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if always, cause yeah. I don't know. It's by need, but
oh,
I mean,
sure.
I believe that would be the that would be the ultimate case. That
sure.
would be the best case scenario.
Of course. Yeah. I love that. So that's your Sickle Cell Hero program.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what else, what other programs do you have? You guys just recently started something pretty unique in our area. Let's talk about what you're doing for the ambulances.
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course. With JFRD locally, they have started putting blood on the ambulances. That's a really new thing for them. And we provide it for them. Yeah. So the blood that you're giving on one of our buses could potentially go to an emergency situation involving, you know, our fire rescue department. But that's a really new program. I want to say about 3 months old at latest.
It's pretty unique. I never even knew that wasn't a thing.
Right.
You know, we kind of think, oh, they're carrying blood on the ambulances. But then again, the ambulances are there to save people's lives,
yeah.
right, in an instant. And here you have blood that you're able to give somebody if they had been in a major accident or a house fire or something where they require that need immediately.
Right.
So how does that work? I mean, you guys supply 70% of the blood mm-hmm. to the area hospitals.
Right.
They're just shifting it to, or is this a separate donation pile, if you will, going to the ambulances?
I mean, on our end, it's we have a whole department that's just, we call them hospital services, and so their whole thing is to make sure that the hospitals get what they need. So mm-hmm. they say, hey, we need like set amount of O positive blood, and we need set amount of like AB or whatever it is that we have. They need rather. We will supply them, so we kind of base it off of that.
Okay.
In particular, O blood, positive or negative, is pretty often the most needed. But I hate to say it like that, because sometimes people who aren't that, if they are aware that they're like A or AB or whatever, will think, oh, well, it's not as important if I donate. And that's not true. I mean, we really go through all of these blood types fast.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, O positive, we can use it universally. So there's a lot of impetus on having that available just at all times.
Right.
You know, so we give the hospitals that in certain numbers, depending on what they're expecting that week or day, you know, for the surgeries or whatever, but also for emergencies.
I always forget what blood type I am. I think I know my kids, but for me, I'm always like, I think I'm A or I think I'm O. Do you guys test for that?
Yeah.
Can you let me know like immediately on the bus what I am?
if your health screening came back that you can donate, yes, but we can't like start pricking
you. Right. And just say, yeah, you're O. We need you. Yeah.
But yeah, so if you're good to donate, then you can find out that day right there.
Okay. All right. Good to know. How do we, let's say I work for a large company like Millennium. We've had your buses out in our parking lots before.
Yeah.
I know how to set up a blood drive. Let's tell the listeners.
So, I mean, I try to make it as straightforward as possible. And that's usually me you're dealing with. If you're in Jacksonville, it's probably me that you're going through. We figure out what's best for the community we're serving. So say you have a church that wants to do it. Great. You know, let's figure out the times that it makes sense for us to show up. Will people be willing to donate during their liturgy or their service? Or is that like an after thing? Do we need like food around to keep people's attention a little bit? Mm-hmm. Or is everybody good to just kind of start donating right off the bat? So like, we have a talk about time, parking space. If we're going to park the blood bus there, it's the size of a normal school bus. So, you know, you want the right parking. That's a pretty easy thing to figure out. I mean, and if anybody's kind of in doubt about that but wants to host one, I can always try to find places nearby that are willing to have us. And so sometimes that's the case where we can't park for whatever reason. There's a landlord or somebody that just does not like the bus or has some, I don't know. Usually people are pretty okay with blood donation either way because they know that the cause is important. But every once in a while we run into hurdles like that. Then I can probably find somebody, you know, block down that is saying, hey, I'll let you park here and we can make an event down the street. But yeah, I mean, it's getting in contact. It's setting up parking. It's getting the right times down, figuring out, you know, how much staff we need and just talking through the process. It's different for each person, but I also think it's pretty straightforward and similar in a lot of ways too.
Yeah. I think it's pretty easy process. You guys do a great job putting it on your website. You bring out posters, you know, sure, that yeah, we're able to hang up in our offices so that our patients know that this is happening on this day.
Right.
So that's really helpful too.
Sure. Yeah. We can market it on social media. We can email people in that zip code that have donated in the past. Yeah, there's plenty of ways that we can get the word out and help, you know, make it a success. But really at the core of it, what makes the blood drives work best is if the person helping me arrange it from that community is as involved as possible. Sometimes people say, hey, I'd like to have this here, and then just kind of wipe their hands of the situation and I have to like go in and figure out these little details and questions. But
it does make it a little more difficult.
Yeah. But, you know, in general, either way, they're doing a good deed. But yeah, the more involved you are as a host of one of these drives, the better they go for sure.
All right. We are talking with James Gaughan. He's the District Community Development Coordinator for LifeSouth Community Blood Centers. January is National Blood Donation Awareness Month. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with James. We're going to talk about we're going to reiterate the need for blood in the whole country, not just in Jacksonville, and the fact that we have a really great opportunity for people to get involved. So stick around. Medicare Connect Radio will return right after this. Welcome back to Medicare Connect Radio, sponsored by Millennium Physician Group. I'm Michelle McCormick. Every week, we're talking about healthcare issues that are important to you, whether you're 65 or older, approaching 65, or maybe you're making healthcare decisions for a loved one in their golden years. We're inviting providers and experts to share insights to help you take control of your healthcare decisions. National Blood Donor Month was first celebrated in January 1970 after President Richard Nixon issued a proclamation establishing the observance. Now in its 54th year, the observance brings attention to the vital role that blood donors play in public health and civic duty. Our guest today is James Gaughan. He's the District Community Development Coordinator for LifeSouth Community Blood Centers. James, thank you for being here today. We have talked about all things blood donation, why the critical need for blood in this entire country. We've had hurricanes and we had a pandemic, right? That shut a lot of things down and people couldn't get it. Can you talk about the impact that COVID had 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago?
Yeah, almost 3 years now. Yeah. It slowed our ability to get blood. I mean, in kind of obvious ways, you know, but also we are yet to get the same donor base that we had prior to that. I mean, I think there was initially, again, for obvious reasons, like a you know, people were scared to get on a tight enclosed space like a bus and give blood during a pandemic, which, of course, you know, we took every precaution possible while we were operational, but even some of the times we weren't, so we had nowhere to be. But since then, we've had a lot of offices that were hesitant to bring us back and do blood drives again. Mm. We've had to kind of just go out of our way to just reestablish connections that we had now that people are a little more willing to do things like blood drives, a little less fearful of the, you know, being in closed spaces.
Right. Can a person who's had COVID donate blood?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to have those antibodies. So, like, that's not a problem at all. Or if you've been treated with the monoclonal?
Mm-hmm.
I always mispronounce that.
I am.
Yeah,
me,
or,
me too.
You know, if you're vaccinated, that's fine. That's, yeah, I don't want anybody to be scared off. If you're not with either of those things, you've never had it or you don't think you've had it or you don't have the vaccine, that's fine.
Okay.
You know, we just need your blood.
You know? Is there a wait time after you had COVID to?
10 days if you just were, you know, diagnosed it. But if you're feeling sick, obviously don't get on our bus and give blood. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, but if you're feeling fine, if you haven't been diagnosed with COVID in the last 10 days, yeah, please get on. Yeah.
Okay.
No problem at all.
Good. Good to know. All right. So let's talk briefly about the Blood Emergency Response Corps, BERC, or BERC. Do you guys call it BERC?
BERC is what I've been saying. That's yeah. I always mess up the acronym.
So what is that? And how important is that?
Oh, I mean, vital. It's a fairly new entity, but we're a member of it. Basically, one of us will be on call, like a blood center will be on call. If some emergency happens, then we're going to help supply whoever needs it. So,
and this is a national mm-hmm, yeah. Corporation or a national
like organization
response,
of,
yeah.
Yeah, of blood centers. So yeah, if something happened in a state that we're not already in, for instance, you know, like Texas or something, and we're the ones on call, then we're going to be supplying that blood to them,
mm-hmm.
you know, say a hurricane hits or whatever. Yeah, that's where your blood's going to come from, because obviously it's going to be harder for them to donate. They just got struck by a hurricane,
mm-hmm.
And facilitate that kind of stuff. Also, a lot of times before a hurricane, I'm just talking specifically hurricanes because that's what we deal with here.
Right,
but,
right.
We will overstock a hospital to make sure their needs are met, like, and then some, because we know, you know, during that hurricane, we're not going to be out with the buses, and
right.
We're not going to get as many people to donate in that time frame. So, yeah, we overstock. Same with like the one or two holidays we do take, which Thanksgiving or Christmas, like the day before, we will give them way more than we need. So we try to do these like extravagant drives to get people out, you know, in bulk, so we know that everyone's covered. Because even for a day, if we're not there, then mm-hmm. you know, the blood supply will dwindle. I mean, right now we've got, I think nationally the average, there's a couple of blood centers that have just such a good donor base, and it's just, you know, have stayed where they need to be. Ideally, you're looking at like 5 days of blood supply for an area.
Okay.
But most places, including us, it teeters around 1 to 2 days of blood supply.
Wow.
Available. Yeah. So it really is just, we're on that like knife's edge of not having enough pretty constantly. So when you see like, hey, I saw them have that emergency need, like sign up last week. Yeah. It's perpetual. We fall in and out of emergency need here in Jacksonville. Always.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. On a typical day, do you have a certain number of pints you would like to collect?
Yeah. I mean, we try to set goals for when we go out and where we're going and just organize around that. But the realistic situation is that, you know, you can't guess at that. It's mm-hmm. hard to really get an idea. You can go someplace and you think, you know, there's 500 people at this office, but only 3 of them are going to donate. You know, I like to think in my head when I set up these drives of the staff that's there, maybe about 10% are going to come out and donate, because that tends to be around where it falls. So yeah, like,
okay.
But at the same time, sometimes people surprise you. You go, like certain offices will, everyone comes out. They'll try, even if they know they're not able, they're going to try.
Okay.
So it's really, has to do a lot with, like I said originally, like the people helping me organize this from inside of that organization, how much effort they put into it and how much they really tried to get people and cheerlead it. You know, there's a lot of misconceptions about blood. Sometimes without asking the question, hey, have you given or have you thought about giving, you won't find out why they won't. Because, you know, like I mentioned earlier, there's FDA regulations they heard about 10 years ago that just don't apply anymore. And they've just been coasting on the idea, well, I can't give. I would if I could.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you can.
Well, let's reiterate what those were, like living overseas.
Yeah, so the living overseas thing with the mad cow disease in Europe, that was, they've allowed for people from the UK or who were in the 90s in the UK, in France or in Ireland to donate now in America. So that risk is, I guess, dissipated. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a scientist, but that's,
yeah.
The FDA seems to know what they're doing. So,
I guess they know, I mean, they test for it when they spin the blood or whatever after the donation.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, no matter what, we're testing your blood to make sure it's safe to give to somebody right. else, but we do like to take safety. There's just protocols for, you know, for instance, if you are aware you have like HIV, you should not donate. Like, mm-hmm. if, you know, you think right. it's the obvious, but sometimes people don't, they really want the gift card or something. You know, so that's, yeah. that's another reason why you don't incentivize it with money.
I got you.
You know, so people don't lie about their health and endanger other people.
That makes sense. That makes sense. All right, so let's go over the requirements to donate.
The requirement would be you are over 110 pounds, you are over 16. If you are 16, you need parental consent. If you're 17 and up, you're good to go. We want you to have a photo ID if it's your first time, but if you've been with us in the past, we've got all that information. So some form of identification, just your face and picture. If you can tell us who you are and we know, then you're good. But mm-hmm. First-time donors, you know, bring your ID. You're going to want to eat a good, healthy meal beforehand. We have snacks and stuff on the bus. So if you haven't, I mean, just say so. Well, usually when people come on the bus and I'm around, I'll ask, hey, yeah. have you eaten lately? Have you gotten, you know, water in your system? Not just coffee, like hydrating, you know, real like water.
You're right.
I'll hand you a bottle. I'll hand you a snack. Hey, you know, eat this, drink this. Let's make sure you're good to go before we do this. But it's fairly straightforward. I mean, most people, you know, in a given moment, like I don't think or prep personally before mm-hmm. I give. I'll give today, actually, later today.
Yeah. How long in between donations can you do it? So if you give today, when can you give again?
8 weeks later.
Okay.
If you're doing a whole blood donation. There's other kinds of donations, and that's something we can talk about, like, individually, depending on what kind of blood you have or what, you know, so you can give, like, platelets and give, like, every 2 weeks. But that it's particular to, like, your body type, how well you're going to do with that. And that does take longer. These like apheresis machines that we use at the centers and sometimes on the buses, you're looking at more of like a 45 minute to an hour process.
So okay.
people are less willing to do that usually, but it is very helpful. And if you have the right blood that we need like platelets from that, or, you know, we're getting demands for that, then, you know, and you're a good match, we'll let you know. We'll ask you, hey,
okay.
What do you think about spending a little more time with us? And
they'll ask you like right on the spot.
Yeah.
They'll know. Okay.
Yeah. Our techs should know, you know, once we've, especially if you're a repeat donor, you've been with us before, we've got an idea of what your blood is and what, you know, how you handle it and, you know, but it's, yeah, yeah. So there's other options than just the whole blood donation. Generally, people get on the bus and just give a whole blood donation and it gets spun down. Like you said, it goes in a centrifuge and we'll separate it at that point and say, hey, what we really need from this person is like the platelets, and the plasma can go this way and the platelets can go that way. And it doesn't all have to be, you know, to the same source or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the most needed blood is?
O. Yeah.
Any O positive, O negative, or?
Either one. I mean, either one is, yeah, we're looking for it. But like I said before, any type, we want it in Jacksonville in particular.
Yeah. So. And how do you encourage people to be repeat donors? I mean, that sounds like a fun job, you know?
I think that a big one for people is seeing the faces of people that actually have benefited from it. There's a whole like set of videos. If you go on YouTube, you can go on just look us up, Life South. We've got these testimonials from real people that have received it, like received blood and been helped by us or mm-hmm. well, really the donors. Like we're just facilitating it. And I think that helps a lot. When I send people those videos, I say, hey, you know, this is a real instance of this happening. It's things you don't think about. I think a lot of people have it in their head that, oh, well, if I get in a car accident, maybe I'll need it. But it's like, no, that's not really even, you know, any surgery you're going into or, you know, if leukemia. Like, there's other issues than just the ones that on the top of your mind that you can help treat. And mm-hmm. depending on what blood you have, you specifically might be really, you know, essential in that process.
Right. Especially a sickle cell hero.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's a good one too.
Yeah.
All right, James. So James Scon is the District Community Development Coordinator for Life South Community Blood Centers. What do you want to leave the listeners with during National Blood Donor Awareness Month?
If you can go donate, obviously we want that. I mean, go find us. Like I said, lifesouth.org is our website. You can find something near you that we're going to be at or one of our centers, Bay Meadows, Julington, Fleming Island. Or if you're really feeling up to it, host a blood drive. Give me a call or text me. I'll say my cell phone number is 904-586-5090. I would love to talk to anybody that wants to about hosting blood drives at whatever group they have. You might have the next big good blood drive that we, you know, support our hospitals on for the next week or so. So yeah, that would be really great. If we could get a few people who say, hey, I heard you on this podcast and I want to do a blood drive. That'd be amazing.
We'll sign up. Believe me, Millennium will do it. Cool. We have some parking lots that the buses would fit in, no problem. And we'd love to bring that to our patients and give them an opportunity to do that as well. And let's also remind the listeners about what you're doing now with Jacksonville Fire and Rescue.
Right. So, yeah, like we've said, we're providing for the city itself now. So, I mean, it's more than just like if you're so we also provide for life flights. I mean, really, any way you look at it, if you're getting into an emergency here in Jacksonville or the surrounding area, this blood is coming from us. And, you know, we could use the people to we could use regular donors to help support that effort.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's awesome. Thank you, James. James Gunn, the District Community Development Coordinator for LifeSouth Community Blood Centers. He said it. It's lifesouth.org. Also, LifeSouth has a toll-free number. It's 888-795-2707. James, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Totally appreciate you.
Absolutely.
The conversation will continue next time on Medicare Connect Radio. Millennium aims to create a genuinely connected healthcare experience for patients by providing a comprehensive and coordinated approach to healthcare. We also want to be your connection to a healthier life. Learn more and schedule your next primary care visit online at millenniumphysician.com. In good health, I'm Michelle McCormick. Have a great day.